welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
With Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast, and my librarian co-hosts today are...
Hi, I'm Megan.
Hi, I'm Sharon. Nice to meet you.
And we are so thrilled to have our guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Amber Benson, and I formerly was an actor, so you may know me from a show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where I played Tara McClay, and I also write books.
Which is amazing. And as a librarian, I like to credit Buffy just a little bit with becoming
a librarian.
Just a little bit. And yeah, because, you know, it had that library aspect to it, and Giles was a bit dreamy. And
you went about, you know, 10 million other women out there. He definitely, like, and is the loveliest.
He's the best. And when I first started becoming, you know, going to library school, one of my friends was like Giles? And I was like, oh, I hope so.
Question, though.
Yeah.
Do you clean your glasses as much as Giles does in Buffy?
No, I'm convinced that was, like, kind of part of his charm. Like, he knew exactly when to start cleaning his glasses. He's like, I'm not being charming enough. Let me take them off and clean them. So everybody just swoons. But, yeah, so we're thrilled. And you're the second person, the second actor that we've had on Turn the Page that I can say your character death completely kills me. So I was killed twice by guests, but yeah.
it was a bummer. My mom still will not watch the episode. She's like, I don't want to watch you die.
Yeah, I cried forever. I don't know if anybody else wants to weigh in.
Well, I mean, it obviously had the biggest impact on the show. It had a whole story arc, you know, Willow turning dark Willow. That was, you know. So memorable. But yeah.
Yeah, Amber, it's such a pleasure to meet you. Like, you're one of my favorite actors from Buffy. And, like, it was so amazing, like, to watch you in that show. But I had, as a writer, what were you influenced by any of your acting roles for your writing? And how did that influence the genre specific that you write in?
That was something Megan and I were talking about. We were curious if you came to genre specific within that realm, or if you were a fan prior to it.
Yeah.
Well, I was a big fan prior. You know, I'm a bibliophile. I love books. I love books so much. I've spent so much money and time and energy on books because they truly were like the magic thing in my life. Like, anytime I didn't feel like I fit, I could just read a book and totally disappear into another world. In fact, I remember sometimes I would read stuff and I would get so like embroiled in what was happening to the character. And I wonder if you guys felt this. You would put the book down and you're like, oh, wait, that's not happening to me. Oh, okay, it's all right. Whew, relax, okay. You're just feeling the feels of the book. but like, I remember reading Susan Cooper, The Dark is Rising, and just like getting totally like enmeshed in that world. And then Diana Wynne Jones was another huge influence on me when I was a kid, reading the Christomancy books, or like,
I love Christopher Chant.
Ah, so good.
Book crush.
Yeah. I was just like, when they did Howl's Moving Castle, I was just like, they're making an animated, my favorite. I love this book so much. So I was super into genre as a kid. I love sci-fi and fantasy, you know. So then when I ended up on a show that is so genre oriented, mm-hmm. of course, you cannot be a part of something like Buffy and not have an impact who you are as a creative person. I feel I was already sort of skewed in that direction, but the more time I spent with, like, we have this amazing group of writers and the actors and the crew, like, we just had such a good group. You really did feel like you were in that Buffy Sunnydale universe when you'd walk on set. Like, we had these amazing sets that just, like, you got lost. Like, you really could feel like you were there. It wasn't like you were pretending. It's like, oh, wait, I'm in the magic box. Oh, I'm in the library. Oh, my gosh, this is very weird. but, yeah, I definitely think working on that show and spending time with the writers definitely colored, you know, how I am as a creative person, what I'm interested in, character. Specifically, like, I mean, the well-drawn characters, especially female characters that were kind of unique in a time when you didn't have that flawed kind of anti-hero female character. You had like a lot of very like Wonder Woman-esque, which is wonderful, but there's the flaws, I think, are what make Buffy so amazing. And I think it definitely influenced me. I love flawed women.
I'm thinking of Diana Wynne Jones, and I'm thinking of, I forget which Crestomancy book it was, but the one with the sister, was it Gwendolyn?
Oh, yeah, Gwendolyn.
She was a really well-done villain in a time when it wasn't so, when that wasn't usually the case.
No, 100%. And I love the juxtaposition, because, you know, that book is so great with, like, the multiverse theory. And the juxtaposition of the different Gwendolyns and how, you know, one universe is totally different than the other, and how you can have a character who's a villain in one and is a hero in another, and all the gradations of that. That was like, I remember, what was it? Was it Witch Week? That was like my first introduction to the multiverse kind of stuff. And then I fell in love with Christopher Pike, and that was like multiverse, sci-fi fantasy, like manna from heaven, all those like kind of thoughtful, like talking about like quantum like mechanics within like these like young adult books. It's bananas when I look back at the stuff we read, because I assume I might be a little older than you guys, but like we're in that same sort of, I'm gonna be 44 in January, so
44. We're right around the same age.
Sorry Megan, so. You're
young.
But yeah, there was just something about that, those books and the introduction. And then you read the Madeline Lingle stuff, and there's, you know, all that is in that world as well. And no, there's just something amazing about like science and math and how all of that is integrated into these books for girls.
Yeah.
Get that strong female, like you said, flawed character that, you know.
Yeah.
So important, especially because, you know, I mean, now, I mean, science right now is like the most important thing in the world. So,
oh my,
I mean,
gosh.
Yes. Right?
That thing for girls to aspire to and look for.
Just for our listeners right now, it is, because this is going to air in 2021 early. This is the first week that the vaccine for COVID-19 is being released. And this whole year was pretty much sci-fi for everybody.
Dystopian. So
yeah. it's crazy because, like, in the beginning, I there were a couple of books I was, like, you know, trying not to recommend because I felt it was, like, too, like, close to home. You know? Like, there was, the one that I was thinking about, I know Susan Beth, I want to say Pfeiffer was the name, and it was... the moon came too close to planet Earth. Yes, exactly. and there was just this whole like section in that book about like a mad dash to the supermarket, and like the mom in the book is like totally like hoarding the right things, and she's getting like seeds for a garden and like all this stuff. And I was like, what? I'm not going to recommend this one right now. It's a little bit too much, but yeah.
No, all the Octavia Butler stuff too, like it was, is so prescient now. You're just like, wow. Like she was so ahead of like, you read that stuff and you're like, oh, it's like she knew. But if you look at humanity, we do tend to behave this way when we are in crisis. So there is a thoughtfulness in a lot of these dystopian books that it really just playing on human nature. Absolutely. It's real, everybody.
So some of your books, so one of your your series is Calliope Reaper Jones, and that is about the daughter of death. And just the voice is a lot of fun in that, I felt. You know, it had that really good...
It's very light and fluffy, which I feel like sometimes you just need a light and fluffy book with a kind of pain in the butt protagonist who will eventually grow. But no, I love silly, fun, light things. And I love really intense, like Dostoevsky-esque things. So I run the gamut as like a reader. So as a writer, you know, I was hoping I'd be more Dostoevsky-esque, but instead I'm more light and fluffy.
Sometimes you're aiming for one thing and it kind of goes in a completely different direction.
Yeah, I was talking to Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls. I'm friendly with her via a friend that used to work for them, and she's incredible. And they're all like those women are fantastic.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But Amy, like you look at her solo stuff, and it's like punk, edgy, and it's like, oh, like she, you know, she does this folk stuff like in the Indigo Girls, but like her passion is like this punk, edgy rock and roll kind of stuff. And I'm like, you just don't know what's going to come out. Like when you work with you collaborate, sometimes you totally change. When a character kind of influences you and all of a sudden you're writing in a totally different style because the character demands that. It's really interesting how like the difference and how you can be lots of different things within the confines of like a media, like writing or music or performing. Yeah, I'm just babbling, name dropping all my cool friends.
Please go on.
Yeah, seriously, yeah, we're not going to complain.
The nicest people.
I know that you've collaborated with a lot of your material. I was actually just watching the web series, a little bit of your ghosts, which was super fun. Always good to have Lord Byron show up.
Right.
Yeah, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about collaboration in your work.
Well, I've been really, really lucky. I've been able to collaborate with some amazing creative people. Christopher Golden, who is one of he's like my older brother. Like whenever I'm in Boston, Massachusetts area, I stay with him and his family. They are like my East Coast family. He's just one of the best humans ever and super talented. And he has like a new book coming out, I think called Red Hands, that everyone should read. But Chris and I actually started collaborating when I was on Buffy. He was friendly with a woman who was doing, well, she was a girl at the time. Now she's a woman. Her name is Dolly Costa, but she was going by the name Little Willow. And she was like, I want to do a website for you. I was like, sure. What? Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything about, I'm like on the show. I don't know any like website. Sure. Whatever. No idea what I was getting myself into with Buffy. And then she was like, I do Christopher Golden's website. And he wanted to know if you'd be interested in doing some comics. And so that's how we ended up doing the Willow Terra comics, which was amazing. We had Terry Moore do the illustrations for the first round. And it was an incredible experience. And I just like, we adopted Chris and his family and they adopted me and my family. And then we got approached by the BBC to do an animated program for them called The Ghost of Albion. And we did that. And then we ended up novelizing that universe for Random House, which was really, really neat. I just love collaborating with Chris. We're actually working on a top secret project right now for Audible.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. So we'll see what happens. I cannot divulge. I can only say that my past is involved. My past is involved in it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Top secret. You're hearing it here first. And then I've also been able to collaborate with Sarah Kuhn on the Clueless comic books, the graphic novels for Boom. That was amazing. Sarah's one of my best friends and one of the most talented humans I know. Her heroine complex stuff is just, her books are fantastic. And I love you so mochi. And like, she has a new one coming out that I'm very excited about. So anyways, we like both loved Clueless, and it was just when they actually came to me and they're like, hey, would you want to do this? And I was like, I'm not doing it unless I can ask Sarah to do this with me, because I just think it would be way more fun for us to do it as a unit versus me trying to do it by myself and probably failing, because you just need sometimes backup. You need like your girl squad. So getting to collaborate with both of them. And then there've been other people too, but those are like the two main people that I've collaborated with and have had such an amazing experience. And Sarah and I have done a little bit with Sean and Maguire. Like we did like a Magical Girls tour, like when Sarah's first book came out, and we were in a car listening to Taylor Swift driving from Los Angeles to Portland. And it was a heck of an experience. We had such a good time. And we stayed in Airbnb, and Sean and stayed in the Shining Loft, which had the Shining carpet in it in our Airbnb in Portland. So it was a really wonderful experience. So I've been very lucky with my collaborators. I've had really good experiences, and it's fun because you divvy up the work. And so it's not just all riding on your shoulders, and you have someone that can kind of, you know, check the work and make sure it works properly, that all the pieces move.
I know that you do some narrations for audiobooks, and
yeah.
I saw specifically the Scott Westerfeld stuff, and yeah. I wanted to ask about that process.
I've been really lucky with the audiobooks. Being an author kind of opened the door to being an audiobook narrator, because I would go to book events. I went to a horror convention, and like you start talking and people are like, oh, I'd love for you to narrate my book. And I'm like, all right, sure, I'll narrate a book. And that's sort of how it all kind of happened. And I've done some of my books, and I've done, you know, I did the Scott stuff that they were, you know, and then I did, you know, the Gretchen Archer stuff, which is really, really fun. And I mean, it's been a really fun experience, because I'm an audiobook listener. Mm-hmm. So I know what I like, which is, you know, I like anything where people are invested and they do the voices, and it's just, you know, it's a lot of fun. I just remember listening to Kathy Bates do, I think, Desperation, the Stephen King novel. And I was just like, oh, this is like theater. This isn't just like someone reading you a book. Like, she's doing she's amazing. So I try and imbue what I do with that same sort of feeling. But it's a lot of fun. I love doing audiobooks. I just did Cory Doctorow's latest one, and I recorded it at my house, and they, you know, Cory and our director were on Zoom, and so we were like trying to, I was recording, sending it off to the editor. They were in the Zoom session, listening to everything, like taking notes. Like, it was, yeah, Cassandra who directed is fantastic. And it just, like, it was such an amazing experience. I'd never done anything quite like that before. but I love audiobooks. So it's an honor to get to do them.
I know. Megan and I are big horror fans ourselves. Megan, you're also a Dark Shadows fan, right?
Yes.
You narrated a Dark Shadows book, or at least you played like a young Elizabeth. Was it Elizabeth?
I did.
Now I'm trying to remember. Elizabeth was, right?
I can't remember. I think that's right. It was, that was a long time ago. It was for Big Finish was the company that was doing them. And they're like, just, you want to come in and record some stuff? I was like, yeah. I always, my sort of mantra is, you just say yes to stuff that frightens you, because invariably, like, it'll lead to other amazing things. If something scares you, it's because you need to grow, and it's an opportunity to do that.
That's pretty cool. That wasn't your first narration, though.
No, I think I had done my own, the first Death's Daughter book, I think.
Right.
So that was, and I, you know, you spend a lot, as an actor, you spend a lot of time doing ADR for stuff, because invariably you'll shoot something and a plane will go overhead, and you know, they can't hear one of the lines. So you have to go in and like go into the studio, watch the scene and match yourself. And I think that is a really good prep for doing audiobook narration, because you have to be kind of like on the ball. And they always make fun of me because I have like a weird thing that I do when I do to ADR. I like, they give you like these three beeps. It'll be like beep, beep, beep. And on the fourth silent in your head beep, you start, because they've sunk it all up. And so I'll stand there with my hand in the air going, bah, with my fingers, one, two, three. And they're all like, what are you doing? Like, I have my weird techniques. I'm sure we all do weird things that like make us feel comfortable. Mm. And so sometimes the audio, I'll do that. I'll have my hand up. I'm like, there's no beeps. Why am I holding my hand up?
But it helps, you know?
It does. Now, I'm curious, like, how you guys started this podcast. I don't know a ton about it.
Wow, thank you.
So I want, that was my, if I'm allowed to ask a question.
Please, ask questions, yes.
I love that you guys are librarians and that you are interested in like informing your audience about new authors or old authors doing new things or, you know, I'm just curious how this came about.
Take it away, Jess.
All right. I feel like I talk too much. No, so I'm gonna give it to other people afterwards. Oh, yeah. Well, not exactly. So one of our librarians, Lisa, had gone to an event at a library convention and was like, libraries are having podcasts now, you know, like we should look into this and we should call it Turn the Page. And we're like, that's cool.
The name.
Yeah, that was Lisa. So that's Lisa. And
Lisa Hollander. And
Lisa Hollander. Hi, Lisa. She's the one who does a lot of our back end stuff and makes sure that everything is on schedule. So what happened was Lisa, she went to this conference, came back, told us that this was a good idea. So then I went to a conference and
librarians love their conferences.
Oh, we love it. This year is killing us. No tote bags, no ARCs, no pens. We want our conferences back. So I went to a conference and I saw our colleagues over at Sachem Library, the Library Pros, and they were talking about podcasting in libraries, and their podcast is great. They do a lot of library and librarian specific stuff, but they're great. And I wrote up a report and I brought it back to our administration and they were like, hey, would you like to work on this? And like you were saying, Amber, I was like, oh, I have no idea what I'd be doing. But of course, I was like, yeah. Yeah, of course. And then I went home and I was like, oh, now I have to actually do this. So Lisa and I kind of mapped out a few ideas. And at first, we came up with the idea very early on that it was going to be sort of not library specific in the way that it was just about libraries and the inner workings. It was the philosophy that when you go to a library, you walk in and one day you might want a horror book or another day you might want information or maybe you want music, but there's everything. So we didn't want to be put in a corner that this is what we're talking about. We wanted it to be open to any topic that excites us. And in that way, it opens it up to other librarians who might want to host. So, you know, I mean, sometimes something will come up and we'll be like super excited about that. I know I'm going to name drop now. The other actor whose death killed me, haha, was Dante Bosco.
Dante's the nicest.
Love him.
What a gem.
He played Rufio, and I didn't even realize I had a crush on Rufio until about 10 minutes before I was about to interview him, and I was telling my co-host, Stacey, I'm like, I think I'm going to throw up. I'm so nervous. But yeah, you know, it came across that an indie publisher was publishing his memoir, and it was something that excited me and excited Stacey. And so, you know, we kind of put it up to the librarians and was like, who's interested, who's on that day. And that's how that came about. So this is sort of how we roll, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you know, sometimes it's looking for the link to libraries also. Like if there is a book, then it gives you sort of an avenue to pursue, or, you know, there's like publishing side of things. Or we're very fortunate in our community, our high school, we have a great alumni network. So like a lot of people have gone on to do all kinds of different things. So we've been calling upon, you know, people in Broadway and television and movies that just so happened to graduate from Syosset High School. So that's been kind of cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's just really very open. And, you know, at this point, it's been a mix of authors and actors and just interesting people. So
archivists, we do go the back end. Sometimes we'll go to special collections archivists.
Libraries. Oh, cool.
Yes.
But so, yeah,
it's really opened up our audience to other people that might not come into the library and they find out about the podcast. So it's really opened up a lot of doors for us and been a positive experience. Yeah.
Definitely.
So cool.
Yeah.
I'm jealous that you spent all this time in libraries. I just wanted to like live in the library after what is it, the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basically Frank Wiley. I was just like, I'm moving in.
Amber, I actually had another question about your writing process, because you have a series, the Echo Park Witches series. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Like I said before, I love genre stuff. I've always loved, there's just something about female empowerment, and there's just something about witches. And something that I was always intrigued by, once again, I'm going to connect it up to that like science, physics, sort of multiverse thing that I had read as a kid and young adult. But there's something about magic being science that we don't understand yet. You know, like all of these things that we sort of go, oh, that's magical or fantastical. Maybe down the line, there will be some sort of scientific, you know, rationale behind it. Plus there's this idea that like that Sherlockian way of doing things where we're intuiting things all the time through our senses that we don't consciously understand, but they hit us in the gut. And so you're like, oh, well, it has to be some extrasensory, but you're like, well, maybe it's just because you walk in a room and someone is upset and you're feeling the feels of them. Maybe that's not a supernatural thing. Maybe that's all of your senses working in tandem, or maybe it's not, maybe it is a supernatural, I don't know. But I was fascinated with the idea of creating a diverse group of women who are forced to kind of deal with each other and support each other within the confines of a coven. And in the books, they're from all different walks of life, different gender identifying, different racial makeups. It's just they run the gamut, because I'm like, that's fascinating. That's my group of lady friends. They're all unique and different and come from different places. It's really important for me to sort of to document women's relationships with each other that transcend just like fighting about men or fighting over clothes or talking about gossipy things. Plus then I wanted to add in that magic, that idea that, well, maybe, you know, empathy is our other senses picking up on stuff, or, you know, the intuitive process and the, you know, all of that being sort of connected up to that tickle at the back of the neck, that intuition, sort of grounding the magic, trying to keep it as grounded as possible. So it's not Harry Potter with like, you know, but there are spells and there are things that are kind of magical. And I had done the Calliope Reaper Jones series, and my editor, Ginger Buchanan, who is also Charlene Harris's editor, who she's not retired, but she's just one of the best people. I adore Ginger. And we had lunch and she's like, what do you want to write next? I was like, I don't know. I was like, maybe some of these witches. Ginger was like, yes, witches. And I think she just always kind of had her, she's always had her finger on the zeitgeist. And I think she knew witches were coming. And so that was sort of the beginning of putting the Witches of Echo Park together. You know, I always have the most trouble with my protagonist. I love other characters, other ensemble characters I love. But when the main character, for some reason, I think maybe it's because we spend so much time as authors putting our, like, using ourselves. And I don't love to, like, go digging into myself consciously. Like, unconsciously, I don't mind mining it. But consciously, I don't really want to, like, I don't know. I don't want to write about me. I want to write about other people. It's way more exciting. So my main character, Lise, who I ended up really enjoying her. But she was the hardest one for me. All the other witches came so easily. Like her maternal figure, Eleonora, like just leaped from my head, completely fully formed, like Athena from Zeus. You know, like she just was this real thing immediately with a personality, and she told it like it was. We like to joke that she smokes pot and drinks bourbon and just says to the dead exactly what she says to the living, which is like the blunt, honest truth. So yeah, I just adored her right from the get-go. She was just such a baller right off the bat. And then, you know, having to sort of figure out what my protagonist, like what she wanted, and not make her, because I feel like sometimes we get caught in this like, oh, she's just a cipher. It's the main character. Everyone's going to put themselves in. But I think they really need to have, your main character needs to be as alive as everybody else. And it's a hard thing for me to do. I have trouble with it sometimes.
There have been so many witch books, especially in the last few years.
No, Ginger knew. She was on point.
it's really amazing. And I keep reading, like, witches are having a moment. Witches are having a moment. The moment has been
years.
Mm-hmm.
No, We were, my friend Mo Perkins, she's a writer director. She and I have been adapting the witch's books for a television show this last year. And it's been really interesting because there were so many witch shows. We got out the door and there were none. And then we started developing and writing and putting the pilot together. And by the time we were ready to go out, there were all these witch shows. I was just like, wow, like this is beyond being in the zeitgeist. This is, I mean, everywhere you turn is a witch doing some witchy thing, like, and rebooting all of these old witch, properties. And yeah. Ginger was very, she knows. That lady knows her marketing and her book stuff, which is, I think too, we've been in such a weird political world where women, you know, our bodies and who we are sort of not ours at this point. They've been sort of, you know, kind of taken away from us a little bit. And there's something about having magic and being powerful and owning who you are and your sexuality and your gender or your gender identifying, you know, like, because being a woman is not about just being a cis, you know, like,
yes.
women, trans women are women, you know? And I think there's this idea that we're not allowed to own this about ourselves, and which is own it. You can't get away from it. The womb is like the magical place of power. You cannot like excise that from, you can't unsex women
from their magic. I think that, I don't know if you read The Once and Future Witches by Alex E. Harrow.
No, I will have to dig into that.
That book was great because it goes back and it talks about suffrage, but then brings in witches and all of the gender identity stuff that, you know, you were just discussing. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. And there was a fear, you know, most of the, you know, like the women who were being accused in puritanical society of being witches were, you know, different in different ways. Yeah. Like either, you know, there was jealousy or they were just different in the way that they did things, or they pissed somebody off.
Yeah.
Or they dared to be somewhat independent.
Or somebody wanted their property.
Like, the easiest way to get property. She's a witch. Let me have what she had.
Yep. No, totally. But there, you know, like you read Macbeth and there's that line, you know, unsex me, Lady Macbeth, unsex me here. And I think there is something about that unsexing of women and women identifying, where we're told those things that are feminine are lesser. And so we have to unsex ourselves in order to compete and to be taken seriously. And I think we've drunk the Kool-Aid. And I think it's bullish. And I think with the return of owning that about ourselves, and whether you're born that way or you identify that way, like owning that for yourself is the only way that we will have power as women and identifying women, you know, it's not about being like men. It's about being what we are.
Yeah.
And that's just as good.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Handmaid's Tale that we're living.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So absolutely. I'm racking my brain because I, again, read so many books that touch upon not only, current witchcraft and stuff like that, but, like the history of like the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
I feel like there've been a lot of like young adult books that have sort of reimagined it in different ways. I just read something, How to Hang a Witch by the author was Mather. Mm-hmm. And Mather is actually
no
Cotton Mather. That's your name. Yes, and it was about her ancestor, and then in the story, she plays somebody who has an aunt. Like the main character has like
so meta. It's killing me. Yeah. That's awesome.
Samantha Mather, who's moved to Salem, and then like the descendants of the other people, you know, kind of go after her, but like the author herself, yeah, it was very interesting. So anyway, that was How to Hang a Witch, but it made me think about it. I was like, oh yeah, that was a weird recent one I read, and there's something else I know I read and I'm just like drawing a blank on, but definitely everywhere, and it's like so good, and the feminist angles of everything, it's just very relevant to what we're living through.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember reading The Witch of Blackbird Pond when I was in, what, third grade, fourth grade?
Love that book.
Yeah. So good. And I remember going, that can't be real. Wait, they did that to people? Like, if you were different, you were, it blew my mind that, because I think we, people who, okay, I had a very, like, entitled, white, middle-class, Jewish, background in Birmingham, Alabama. My dad's a doctor. My mom was a nurse. Like, we were okay financially. And I didn't have the worries that the majority of people in this world have. I was very, very lucky. And I think I grew up in a world where I believed that there was good and there was bad, and good would always triumph over bad. And now as an adult, when I look at the world and I have to move beyond the lens of my entitled self and go, actually, no, for you, you were born in a way that allows you to have like a worldview where good can triumph. But like the majority of the world, that is not how it is. And in fact, in our country, we just went through a whole experience where the democratic process was almost taken away from us. Because good does not always triumph over evil. and it's disillusioning, and poop on me that like I'm upset about it, because everybody else, that's just a freaking reality, and that's my entitledness speaking. But it's upsetting and disillusioning, and I want to live in a world where everybody gets a break, and that's just not the world we live in. And I don't know how we fix it. I think that's what we have to figure out moving forward. How do you fix this stuff? How do we give everybody a fair shake?
I want to ask Megan, because you said that you loved, I read The Witch of Blackbird Pond. Did you get something similar out of it when you were reading it as a kid?
I did, because I felt like as a young child, growing up and like you're experiencing, you're going through some of the isolation that the main character feels. You're like, like how is this world, is going to be against me at times, and how am I going to push through it? And then there's the boy in the book that ends up a really big yes. And he's a very good friend to her. And like at the end, she gets through the trials of what she has to go through. And as a young girl reading the book, I really felt like this was like relevant to me, even though this took place such a long time ago, that I could experience that and go through what the main character was experiencing in that book. And I think The Scarlet Letter was another book that really struck me too. And it's still so relevant today, even though it was written so long ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that, especially now, just with, the way that actresses or actors, if you are portrayed, like, it's like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you're too sexual, you're, oh my God, look at you. But if you're not enough, then you're called, shunned for that too. And you just, like, especially... just being a young, like a young child starting their acting career. And, I don't think a lot of young girls realize that they're being sexualized, because this is how it is. And then when they get older, they're kind of dealing with the reckoning of that. And it's crazy. I mean, I think about Britney Spears and... Yeah. How she was so young and was, at the time, like everyone was like, oh, Britney, what are you doing? But she was a kid. Like, did she really know what she was 100% doing? Because, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's not just in entertainment. It's in the world, this idea of your only value is your sexuality. I mean, that's why you have all of these characters in literature where women are manipulative, and they do these very underhanded things because they didn't have the ability. They didn't have agency, exactly. Mm. They didn't have the ability to actually like be like, no, I don't want that, or I'm not, they had to do these very backward things in order to manipulate the situation to serve their purpose. I've been very intrigued my whole life by serial killers. I think that's something that most, I don't know why women, we love it, but we do. We're so fascinated.
When I was sick, I used to like watch serial killer documentaries, and I don't know why. And I think it had something to do with the fact that like I would sweat and then I'd feel better. Like it would get my heart moving. But I'm homesick as a child. I'm going to turn on Unsolved Mysteries. Oh, now I feel better. So.
I started doing all this research into female serial killers because I had an idea for something, and it was actually a television pilot that I sold that never ended up getting made, but it was all about a female serial killer. And I started doing all this research, and I realized that we're in the middle of a sea change. You're going to see more women killing the way that men kill because women are finally untethered from the house. Women kill by poisoning and by smothering, these very intimate things, and they kill people around them because they're not out in the world. Do you know what? And they have to do it in these very like insidious backward ways where people don't even know they're doing it, and they get away with it for a long time because you're killing people near you. So you're going to be a suspect right off the bat. So you have to be insidious about how you do it. Whereas men can just go off into the world and just do whatever they want and fulfill these like messed up fantasies and these rituals in their head. Women weren't allowed, you know? I think we're going to start seeing women behaving in ways that we've always been, oh, they're the women are the nicer sex. They're more maternal. No, they're not. Women are just on par. They do just as many awful things. They just do it in different ways because of how society constrains us.
It makes me think of what is it? We've Always Lived in the Castle.
Yeah.
Everybody's read this
Shirley
book, right?
Jackson. Yeah, that's a classic. Yep.
Like how Mary Kat was, you know, like what? Spoiler alert: she wasn't nice. That's going to be the title. That's going to be the title of this podcast. Spoiler alert: she wasn't nice.
I think that's great. Actually,
I have just a quick question, if you wouldn't mind me asking. Sure. Was there? I know sometimes actors are able to take something from the sets that they worked on as like a memento. Do you have anything like that from the Buffy days?
You know, I ended up with the pants I wore when I was killed. And we ended up auctioning them off for charity.
Oh, that's nice.
Which was kind of cool. I think that was kind of it. They were real like Hawkeye. They didn't want you taking stuff. I think Allison walked off with one of the big round thing at the on this the filial. Finial, whatever that
is. I know.
On the stairs, the finial on the stairs. I think she walked off with that from Buffy's house. random bizarre things. But Fox ended up like making money selling all of that stuff. They sold all of the props and costumes and stuff from Buffy, which I thought was kind of odd.
You know, I am years and years ago, I interned for the archives at Miramax, and they ended up doing the same thing when Miramax, you know, went belly up. So doesn't surprise me, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's a lot of memorabilia stuff people love having. What I find sadder is people will buy stuff and they'll come and they're like, this is the thing. I was like, no, I never wore that. I don't remember everything I wore, but I know basically like if it's not frumpy, I didn't wear it. But people will spend a lot of money on stuff thinking that they've bought this like piece of memorabilia that has resonance. And then you're like, well, actually, I don't think that. I think someone took you for a ride.
You're too nice. You don't want to freak
out. I just sign it. I don't say anything.
So this was Jessica and my librarian co-hosts were
Megan
and Sharon.
And our guest was
Amber.
and we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.